Hey guys, how you doing? My name is Matt McClelland, and I am an alcoholic. Nervous as hell. This microphone wasn't here when I came through treatment. I came here. My sobriety date February 23rd of 2010. I sat in these same chairs, walked these same grounds, smoked cigarettes on those railings out there, and tried to figure out how to put it all back together. Start this thing. Thanks, Chris, for the intro. Appreciate it. This is awesome to be able to come back out here. There were a couple of things in my when I was getting sober that were a huge impact on me, and one of them was the speaker meetings. Regular guys that came back to tell their story on how they did it and how they continue to do it in the real world. Not Captain America, not somebody who's paid to show up and do it as a counselor, not somebody who somebody who's living life on life's terms and proving to me that I can go back out there, reintegrate into society, and be a normal person, you know. I grew up in the Bay Area in California. I had a really heavily religious childhood. Family was pretty strict, and so I followed the rules. That's what I did. I was a late bloomer, didn't start using until, 17 or 18. That rabbit hole really quickly. Started waiting tables, getting some freedom, drinking, experimenting with drugs, and for those authentic people, my story, I identify as an alcoholic because those are the meetings that I go to, and that's how I'm used to identifying, but I'm a drug addict. Methamphetamines, that was my drug of choice. I was a hardcore user for 16 years. Used to cook, sell, and still missing teeth. So backtrack 1993, that's when I graduated high school, and that's when everything started to break down. That's when everything started to get loose, and that's when I started to get opportunities to choose and make decisions. Once I got that opportunity, I was off and running. That was it. As soon as I had a taste of freedom, that's all it really took, and that's all I really needed. I thought, I really did, I honestly believed to the core of my being that I would be able to see addiction coming down the road, and that as I got closer to it, I would actually be able to say, okay, this is it. I can see it's getting closer now. I need to back off and relax. Take a time out, dry up, whatever. That was not the case. Not the case at all. By the time I had realized that that I was using way too much, way too often, more than anybody else around me, it was already too late. And so I had embraced it at that point. I had one brief stint of a break in 1999. For 6 months when I went to Europe, traveled around. I was still drinking and using whatever drugs I could use, but that was a break from the hardcore stuff that I was using. After that, I came back from Europe, and I lived all over the Bay Area, in San Francisco, in Oakland, and moving around constantly, trying to find a group of people that did what I did the way I did it. I ran with people that did, I put on Burning Man, people that did art, that did music, and all those people used, but nobody was using as much as I was, as often as I was, and so they would fade out, and I would fade in with a new group of people, and this was a recurring theme through my whole life. That started after high school, and continued through the whole process of my using career. when I got back from Europe, I decided that I had some friends that were dying, and that's part of the reason I came back. I'd sold everything I owned, and I told myself that if I found a place to live, that I would move there. So I saved up $5,000, I bought a one-way ticket, and I took off and went to Europe. I ended up crashing and burning out there and having to come back. After getting back, getting on my feet, took up with the same old friends, the same old routines, doing the same things. And I was back down the rabbit hole again. It's been so long, it's hard to remember the actual sequence. So I moved into a 30,000 square foot warehouse where the artists that lived in that community were people that put on Burning Man and did all the art projects for that festival. As you can imagine, a 30,000 square foot warehouse where we lived all in shipping containers, it gives you a lot of time and anonymity to be able to do a lot of crooked and dirty shit. So that's what we did. We had all night to do it. There were no neighbors to call us out. It was in a warehouse district, and that's what we did. We cooked dope. We sold dope. We used dope. And we worked on what we called art projects, and we built some crazy shit that was really awesome. But we were so fucking high the whole time. It was crazy. Sorry, kids. Yeah. Higher than dogs could hear, I'd like to say. So that worked. It worked for a long time, for a long while, and that's why I continued to do it. It paid dividends, and that's what I was all about. I was all about dividends. I wanted to make sure that I was getting back what I was putting in. I was putting a little bit in. I was getting a whole hell of a lot back for a while, and that's why I did it for so long. So from 93 when I started down to 2005 when I hit my first bottom back in the Bay Area. What is that? 12 years. That was a good time. That was a good run. Everything blew up. And of course, it wasn't me that was the problem. It was the area. So I tried a geographical move. So again, I sold everything I owned, which wasn't much. I left a shit ton of stuff behind. And I moved to New Mexico. I don't know if anybody's from New Mexico or been to New Mexico, but if you are, don't take this the wrong way, but I would be totally cool if we gave New Mexico back to Old Mexico. Not a good place if you're trying to get sober and get clean at all, by any means. The girl I was with, she was from there, and it was a bad idea. We moved into Albuquerque. I found a shitty job that paid $9.07 an hour, and I went to work doing the same thing. It took about 2.5 months, and I was using at the same level that I was using again in the Bay Area with complete strangers this time. Nobody I knew, nobody I trusted, but it didn't matter. It didn't matter. The bar was continually being lowered at every opportunity to make the situation fit my needs. And my needs were to get high, to use without consequence. I remember having conversations with people. You know, early morning, right before the sun comes up, conversations about how everybody would dog us for using. And like we were these drug addicts with morals and values. And then we would go and meet up with our friends that just got back from robbing cars, smashing windows, and go through all the loot, you know. And that, those were heartfelt conversations. Like I really genuinely believed to the core of my fucking being that I was a drug addict with morals and values and a belief system. I really believed it. Like, and there were other guys that were worse than me that I ran around with. They all ended up in prison. One guy used with his mom, he ended up in prison. Or they were all ex-felons that were coming out of prison. I was a very lucky person. I never got caught. Missed ATF raids. I missed just time and time again where I had police interaction in my house, arresting me, spent Christmas in jail, again and again and again. And I kept getting away. There were no consequences for it. So I just kept mowing along, moving along. I spent 5 years in New Mexico burning it down. That was the third time that I'd finished up burning it. At that point, I'd lost the relationship. I'd lost the house. I'd lost the job. The lady I was with, she was extremely, responsible. She was extremely responsible. So she was able to figure out a way for us to get a house and buy a house. And all she did at the end of each month was give me a number to meet. So I would go out and do my hustle, bring in money, and pay those bills with whatever it was, and she took care of those items. So as soon as we broke up and she left, I couldn't make one house payment. The house went into foreclosure instantly. It was $1,100 a month. They have forever food stamps in New Mexico. That means all you have to do is show up for the first visit, answer the phone, have a conversation once a month after that, and you can live on food stamps in New Mexico forever. Here in Texas, it's 3 months for men, for single men. I couldn't do that. I couldn't show up to that. So I was eating peanut butter and stale bread. They had shut off the gas meter. I hooked it back up. They came and take the gas meter if you do that. They physically removed the fucking gas meter. I was in the kitchen and I heard the noise and I looked out the window and the guy's dragging it to the fucking car.
Sorry, buddy.
Plug your ears. I was running a garden hose to the other neighbor fill up my 5-gallon cooler so I could flush the toilet. They'd shut off the water. I was entertaining the idea of tunneling under because they had locked the manhole, but I thought that would be too obvious and weird. I moved everything into the living room, and because I had no electricity, no heat, I was I was cooking out of the fireplace, and my ex was kind enough to buy me a quart of wood, and so that's how I heated the place. In New Mexico, in the winter times, it snows, it gets cold. I was stealing electricity during the days from the neighbors, so it was gone. It was all gone. I was building movie sets for the movie studios. Had a good job. It was 12 hours a day. It was 6 days a week. It was for 4 months at a time, which is a meth addict's dream. Shit ton of money and all those hours, and you're good to go. Let's do it. So I worked on a lot. It gave me this false sense of like success. I was working on Terminator, and I was working on 310 to Yuma, and I was working on Transformers, and I'm like, I've arrived. I've made it. Look at me. Look how good I am. I got fired from 3 movies. Finally got kicked out of a union that is supposedly like impossible to get kicked out of. So there wasn't one single thing in my life that I had not screwed up and thrown away willingly or been taken away, but was, gave it away, really. Smushed cigarettes out of Peter Piper's pizza. Parents would come out, steal a smoke, mother kid's birthday party, and I'd go pick those up. I didn't have the money to buy papers, and I didn't know how to roll cigarettes. I just smoked them. And I showered in the Exxon. So that's where I came from. Let's see. Give you an idea. That's enough of all that. That's some shitty stuff. Let's talk about the good stuff. Let's talk about how it got sober and how it got better. That's my qualifications. I earned this fucking seat. And I earned this microphone, and I earned that 8-year chip I just received in February. And I get emotional about it. Because it's a big fucking deal. It's a big deal. So I got sober here in Texas. They said I had a moment of clarity where I didn't want to do this anymore. I just didn't want to do it. I couldn't do it. And I didn't know what to do. And I had been walking for, I don't know what that is, 93 to fucking 2010. 17 years. I mean, 17 years I've been running in one direction. Hard. Fast as I could. And if you couldn't keep up, fuck you, I'll find somebody else who can. And I'll find somebody else who can. So I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to get back. I didn't know who to talk to, and I didn't know what to say. I didn't know the questions to ask. I was lost. I was literally a man in the middle of the world, lost. And so I called the only person who still answered my phone calls. That was my ex. She'd moved across town, and she said, yeah, you can come stay at my place. You get sober here. You can clean up, but you can't use. So I said, okay. So I packed up my 3-wheeled tricycle, and I had a little ghetto high. Built a cart for the back to tow, put all the shit that I thought was important in it, and I started across in the, it was like 11 or 12 o'clock at night, in the middle of the night, in the middle of a snowstorm, the middle of winter, across Albuquerque on a 3-wheel bicycle. Cross town, listening to AC/DC on this iPod that only had AC/DC on it. Back in Black! So to this day, when AC/DC comes on, I have a rhythm that I pedal to. Back in Black. And that rhythm comes back to this day. It's fucking stupid. But I wish I had a video of it, man. That'd be so cool. So I would stop like over overhangs at gas stations and stuff and try to cool out and, you know, dry off. And people would drive by like, is that dude on a three-wheeled bicycle in the middle of a snowstorm at 2 o'clock in the morning in the middle of Albuquerque? Not a safe city. Yeah. Fucking load it down. So I did that. That's how much I wanted to not do that anymore. That was the first level of surrender for me. That was the first level of walking away from it. For the first time, walking in a new direction. And that felt really, really good. It felt amazing. And that's what motivated me, you know. So I got there, and I slept and I ate and I slept and I ate. And she said to me, we found a place for you to go. Are you willing to go? And I said, hell yeah, that sounds good to me. Let's do it. I said, oh, wait, can I smoke there? She said, yeah, absolutely, you can smoke there. I said, cool, and I went back to bed. I slept for like 4 days. And I got up, and I would eat and go back to bed, eat and go back to bed. And then I realized after that, I didn't ask where it was. And so I asked her, I said, where is it, you know? Where is this place? She said, Austin, Texas. I was like, fuck. I don't know nobody in Austin. I don't know nobody. I didn't know anybody in New Mexico. When I left San Francisco in the Bay Area, I just left. That was it. I just packed up my shit and left. I didn't tell any of my family. I didn't tell my friends or anybody. I just left. So I walked away from everybody, moved across the United States. And my dad, she called my dad, and my dad had to come and pick up his boy. So I packed up all the shit I could. My house, it was a four-bedroom house. It looked like a dope house. It was shredded. Holes in the walls, and I mean, it was shredded. I left so much shit behind. I had a 6x12 U-Haul trailer that I packed full of stuff, and I did it all on my own, and I didn't use dope doing it, and that was amazing. That was fucking amazing. The lady I was with is amazing as well. She saved my ass. She helped me clear up all the warrants. She helped me clear up all my loose ends. What a blessing. So my dad flew out. This is like, what's that called when you peak in valley? Yeah, schizophrenic or something. Whew, man, that was harsh. This is hard. So my dad flew out, and we got in my shitty car, and we filled it full of gas, we fixed the flat tire it had, and we drove to Texas. I'll skip that because I can't talk about it, obviously. So we drove to Texas. He dropped me off at Cross Park. It's not there anymore. That's where the women's facility was, where the detox center was. And I was good. I was good. I was ready. Hold on. Okay. I was good. I was ready. I was like all gung-ho. Like, let's do this. Let's get this fucking sober. Get me there. Good. And there was a driveway. We turned. It's like a business park. And we got there, and we hit the fucking driveway. And just something happened. Like panic. Like, oh, shit got real, right? We hit the driveway. We're pulling in, and there's people out there smoking, just like it was when I walked up here, smoking cigarettes, like people smoking weird cigarettes and like whatever cigarettes they had, and burnts and shorts and talking mess and trying to figure out who the new people are here and who's that. And I panicked, but I'd made a commitment, and I was going to follow through with that the best of my ability. So I showed up, and I went in there, and all of a sudden this like attitude came over me. I don't know what happened. Like, I was just a dick. Instant dick. Sorry. But I was so bad, and I felt so guilty for that. And they had detox, and there were all these people in there, and I'd already detoxed it back home. So, back home in New Mexico, not my home. So, there's these guys that had alcohol, heroin, methamphetamine, like you name it. Everybody was in there just trying to kick whatever they had and try to get, you know, on Suboxone and just drooling one guy. And I was like, what is this, you know? This better not, please, this better not be rehab, please. And it wasn't, it was detox, thank God. And so, that means I got to get sober is what that means. So, put me through the intake, and they put me in a meeting, and the lady says, is there anybody here who's first time in AA, never been to a meeting in their life? And I was 35 years old, and I raised my hand, and I said, no, I'm meeting. She looked at me, and she's like, shut up. Seriously, anybody in here that hadn't been? And I said, me, I've never been to an AA meeting. Nobody in my family went to AA, everybody's normal, I'm the weirdo. So I went through that first meeting in detox, and that was not a good representation of AA. I don't recommend it. Don't base AA off detox. Don't base anything off detox. So they sent me out of here. That's when I got to Buda, got to the ranch. And there was 76 guys that I went to the ranch with, and I sat in here. It was not co-ed, which was fantastic for me. It was a brilliant idea. I definitely would have had a lot harder time. The first 2 weeks, I was really upset. They told me that I had to quit everything, that I couldn't just... I came here just to quit dope. I didn't come here to quit alcohol and any of that stuff. So I was pretty upset, and I was kind of bucking the system. And for the first 2 weeks, it was a really hard adjustment. I had a hard time sleeping. I didn't like the... Didn't like the people. I didn't like the situation. I was very angry, understandably so. I came in weighing 163 pounds. I gained 40 pounds on the gravy in there. That's good gravy, dude. That's good gravy. I could eat whenever I wanted, as much as I wanted. And that was a godsend, like food. I could have like nourishment and just lots of it. So I ate, and I tried to sleep, and I showed up to the meetings. And about the second week, I stopped asking why and how come, and I just got into the deal, and I started doing it, right? I got into the middle of the boat, started doing it. The morning meditations, I sat in here and started actually trying to think of something positive instead of sleeping. Started to take participation in being an active participant in my sobriety, like be a person. And I told myself, no matter how cheesy it was and how stupid I thought it was, I was going to do it. So that meant like musical therapy or whatever. I don't know if y'all do that. Yeah. Y'all have to make a nest still? Yeah. I'm sorry. If it works for y'all, great. It didn't work for me. It was very hard for me to go out there and be a part of that nest and the drawing and the coloring. And there were people like, oh my God, I saw the light. And I was like, I don't know. So I just doodled, and we turned them in, and we hung them in the hall, and that was that. But I participated. It's really easy in the beginning to look for all the differences in sobriety. It's really easy to see how we all aren't the same. But the more time I have in this program, the longer I go, the more alike I am with every one of you guys. I used to think only a meth addict could talk to a meth addict, that an alcoholic could talk to an alcoholic, so on and so forth. The book is the same no matter what. The 12 steps are the same no matter what. The 9-step promises are the same no matter what. And I'm here to tell you 110% that they are, watch my cusses, they're real. They work. They are. It's legit. When I got here, there were 76 people sitting in this room, and I was sitting right around in this area right here. They said to me, 76 of you guys are in here. There are three of you that'll stay sober. The rest of you guys are going to relapse. And I thought, that is tragic. Why would you tell us that? Why would you say that? That means two other guys in here are going to stay sober. That's it. And I meant it. I really meant it. I meant it. I really thought that that was dick move. Like, why would you do that? You know, the gal across the street had gotten sober for me before I left. She said, it's going to take me 7 times to get sober. The gal in the detox that ran that meeting, she told me it was going to take me multiple times to get sober, multiple attempts. The average person of my age and my level of use takes 7 times to get sober. I'm here to tell you right now that relapse doesn't have to be a part of your story. And that was super important for me to hear and to say. In the beginning, I felt like I didn't have the right to say it. There was one gal, and ironically enough, she ran the musical program. She ran the nesting. And she had 5 years, and she hadn't relapsed. She was the only person I heard that from. The only person. So if you're new, and this is your first time, it can be your last. It's my last... For the last 8 years, it's been. As long as I continue to suit up and show up and be a part of an active participant in my recovery, I don't have any worries about that. I don't future trip about that. I future trip about retirement and, like, do I have a 401k, which I don't, and do I, you know, how do I get the money together to buy a house? That's the kind of shit I trip about now. Relapse isn't mandatory. It doesn't have to be a part of your story. And when I got sober, I did sober people, sober places, and sober things. That's what I heard, and that's what I did. That made sense to me. That was something easy that I could wrap my head around, something that I could apply to anywhere, at any time, no matter what. If you weren't sober, if it wasn't sober, I didn't go. Plain and simple. I went to 200 and, like, when I got out of rehab... I went to sober living, and I went to like 290 meetings in 90 days. I didn't have a job. I couldn't get a job, and I hated sober living. So I could did my stuff. God, I was like one of the only guys with a car. Got out and went to meetings 3 days a week. That's where I met Chris. That's where I met everybody. I went to different meetings all over the place, as much as I could. And then curfew was 10 o'clock. I'd go to the Barton Springs, kind of ogle through the gate, the chain link. Ooh, that girl's topless. Pick off the leeches, watch my stuff so the hobo, the bums don't steal my shit, and then do my step work. That's what I did. That's what I did when I got sober. That's how I got sober. It was sober place, sober thing, with sober people. That was easy. We could totally hang out. What do you think, buddy? You're doing good. So if you're new, that's my easy recipe for success there in the beginning. It took me 6 months to go down to, before I actually went down to 6th Street, and I did it on a Wednesday in the afternoon. I had never been to Austin down to 6th Street before, and so I figured it was safest if I went in the middle of the week, and I did it by myself, and went down there, just walked around, see what it was, and I was like, this is the same, same shithole everywhere you go like that. That doesn't change. Sponsorship. I was getting my life back really quick. I was motivated to get my stuff back. And my counselor, when I got out, said, you're going to relapse. And I was like, you too. Like, this is... Come on. I said, no, I wasn't. And he said, you can't drive your car until you got a license. So I got a license. You can't go anywhere until you have insurance. So I got insurance. And you can't go... you need to get a bank account. So I went and got a bank account. And he's had all these tasks for me to do to reintegrate society. And so I was like, give me the list. And boom. And one of them was like, get a sponsor. Boom. Got the sponsor. And he's like, who is it? I said, Joe. He said, Joe, who? I said, I don't know. It's an anonymity. I don't know. He smokes cigarettes. I don't know. He rides motorcycles. I'm good with that. Joe's all right. Joe did the deal with me. Joe ended up going back out. And so did everybody else that I knew. Everybody else I knew went back out. I don't know anybody that I went to rehab with that didn't go back out. Now, I know a ton of those people that came back in and are sober today. That's another huge, important part of this message, is that if you don't make it, you can come back. You can come back. These seats are always here. 8 years later, these seats are here for me. And there are some people that have died. There's some people committed suicide. They've overdosed. That's real. That happens all the time. And the longer you stay in the rooms, the more you'll see it. People that just can't cope. People that just can't figure out how to use these tools, the spiritual toolkit that they give you, to reach out for help, to come back and be a part of something like this down the road. For the new people in here, take stock of what you got. Take note of what it is that's affected you, that's gotten to where you're at, and this far. And don't waste it, you know. And remember that this that was freely given to you, it's a responsibility for us to return that. I'm not getting paid to be here. This is my Sunday. I work 5 days a week. I've got a wonderful lady. We're engaged to be married in October. Thank you. She's fantastic. She had a 3-year-old boy when I met her. He's 10 now. He just learned how to ride a bike. I know 10 is old to do that. That's weird. I thought so too. But that's how life is. Life changes, right? So it's important that I show up here tonight to come back and touch base with what it was that made me and gave me the opportunity. And so I ask that at some point in your sobriety, no matter how long it is, that you come back and do the same. This one of these meetings was literally a cornerstone in my sobriety. It's what changed my deal. So get a sponsor. I did these little shitty notes on the way over here too. Meetings, middle of the boat. That's all good stuff. Loose garment was another phrase I heard a lot. Wear this program like a loose garment. So you see the guy that shows up in the gym clothes, and he's got the sweats and the workout stuff, and he's got the bottle, and he's got like the bag and the earphones, and he's never at the gym. Like that guy. That's what I was scared that sobriety was going to look like for AA. I was going to have that book, and I was going to have the shirt, and I was going to have the mug, and I'm going to be like, what are you doing? And I'm going to meetings, and I've got to go out and tell my story, and I got sponsees, and that's how it has to be. That works for some people, and God bless those people. God, people like, I couldn't go to rehab for work. That sounds insane to me. That sounds like suicide to me. To spend my eight, yeah, no. God bless you. I mean, seriously. Yeah, for the foreseeable future. So I found a way in this program to show up and not have it wear it on my sleeve. You know what I mean? I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous who's available all the time to anybody who needs it, anybody who wants it. I guess that's the difference. Not for people who need it, but people who want it. I wanted it. I wanted it from day one. And there was nobody who was going to tell me different. In fact, when they did, it was actually a pretty good motivator for me. The more I rely on this program, the more freedom it's given me. And that's counterintuitive. When I got here, that the reliance on a higher power, the reliance on a program like this that's this involved, that's simple but not easy, sounds counterintuitive to me, that I can be free if I work my ass off and get involved in this program. I can literally go anywhere today. I can literally do anything with anyone today. I can show up and look everybody in the eyes. I can get pulled over by the cops, and I've got insurance, and I've got a clean driving record. No, that's not true. I got a couple tickets. But I got insurance. Come on. Who's got insurance? I ain't had insurance for a long time. I'm working on a 401k. I got a good job. I got a badass job. I got stuff today. I got my shit back. I got my life back today. And that's not because I did it. It's because I followed the directions. I wanted to, and they showed me how, and so I did it. And I would bug in Chris in the kitchen at 13 at the meeting we go to. How have you done this for, you know, Chris has got, how many years you got? 19 years. What? That's crazy. What? I was sober. I thought 1 year is crazy big. I thought 5 years was amazing. And 19, that's a lie. That's crazy. But it's real. Like, that stuff happens. I'm at 8 now. It's crazy. So at a year and a half, I balked all the way through a year and a half. I was very chip motivated. I wanted all the chips. Just like they lay them out at some of the meetings. That was really exciting to me. I wanted the row. And how much time I got? I got 6 minutes. Perfect. I stayed in for every chip. 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 6, 9, 12. And I thought when I got 12, I'm going to quit. Thank you. You guys are awesome. I had a great time. Met some good people. Coffee was all right. It was free. Best price. I'm going to go now. And literally, not every meeting, but I don't know, at least once a week, I was back there with him and a couple other guys that had time like Chris has time. And I was like, why, how do you do it? Like, why do you do it? How do you want to do it? I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this forever. I want to do it right now, but not forever. And something happened. They talk about don't leave until the miracle happens, right? That's some hokey shit. There's a ton of hokey stuff in here. But it's cliche for a reason, and that's because it works, because it's real stuff. They keep saying it because it's true. The miracle for me happened between a year and a half to 2 years. So I got that 1 year chip and I was like, sweet. And then I realized there's an 18 month. Then you get the 2 year chip. And at that point, I'll be 2 years. Then I'm going to go. Bye. For real. And so I got that year chip and I decided to stay for another 6 months. And I got that year and a half chip. And then I decided to stay for the next 6 months to the 2 year chip. And something in that year and a half to 2 years changed. Something clicked. And those meetings in the kitchen with Chris and Johnny P and Todd, they didn't happen anymore. It was just, how's your day? How's your lady? How's your daughters? How's life? How can I be a service? You know? Yeah, I'll bring the topic. Yeah, I'll do coffee. Something changed. Something in my heart. I don't know what it was. It wasn't anything I did. I just kept showing up. Like, there was no, like, you know, God coming down through. I just noticed one day I stopped asking. That's how it happened. I just noticed that I haven't asked. Like, I haven't given a shit in a while about that. So I show up today 3 days a week to my meeting if I can make it. My job's gotten a little bit bigger and a little more demanding, and it's harder for me. But I'm there pretty regularly, 3 days a week. I still pick up service commitments. I've had, in 8 years, 3 sponsees. So I have not done this program perfectly, by any means. And I have not done it, at the prescribed time and format. I went 4 years without a sponsor. I don't recommend that. But I kept showing up. And everybody, every time I get a chip, every single time, this shows you how shitty of an AA guy I was. Every time I get a chip, everybody would say, man, I remember you when you came in. I did not think you would make it. He's laughing because it's fucking true. He said to me, man, I can't believe you're still here. Yeah, I'm still here. Fucker. It's good, though. It's good that you can laugh. It's good that you can cry about it. It's good that you can feel, you know, you guys, I just hope that you guys hear what I'm saying and know that it saved my life, man. It's going to get sad again. Save my life. And you guys have an opportunity here to get. I'm nothing special. I'm just your low bottom drug addict. I still missing my two front teeth, and that's not from a fight. It's not from something cool. It's because I smoke so much meth. Oh. So they fall out. I'm not something special. I'm just the average dude that just kept showing up, even when they said, you know, I can't believe you're still here. And I didn't want to quit. This program has given me dividends, and they continue to pay out today. And the day that they stop paying out, the day that I do the deal that I signed up for, the way I've been doing it for the last 8 years, and they stop paying out, is the day I'll quit. Because there's no point in it, right? And you cannot say that you go to the gym and work out. I exercise on a regular basis. Exactly. If you only go to the gym once, right? You cannot say that you are getting sober or sober if you go to one meeting or two meetings. You have to go regularly and make it part of your daily routine. And if you make that part of your daily routine, that means you're a person that works out. That means you're a person that's working on staying sober. This program's given me back everything. And I couldn't have done it without guys like Chris and places like this and opportunities like this for me to touch back 8 years, 8+ years or whatever it is. And I'm super grateful that Chris asked me to come out here. Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate the opportunity.